Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson.
And I'm Dennis Hart. Always great to be back with you on these summer Fridays. Paul, good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's a nice cool day today after a light rain last night, and I went to the Bandshell concert, and it was magic. The rain stopped right before the concert began.
You know, Paul, you went to the concert, and I live four blocks away from it, and I stayed home because it was raining. But you came down from Story City to go to the concert. I admire that.
Well, it's a question of timing, and I don't think God would allow the Bandshell concert to be canceled when it's the last concert of the season. Great show. Michael Galimo always makes great musical choices, and we sat there and just enjoyed.
And we could hear the music and John Burnett Larkins, the announcer, at our place because we live only a few blocks away. So it was if we were there, but we were high and dry.
And then you could have turned on KASI and had stereo, you know.
Well, there you go, that other radio station down the street. Hey,
That's right.
Have a fine show on this radio station today, Paul. In just a few minutes on this very broadcast, we are going to talk with Story City Pastor Kurt Jensen, whom you know very well, who coordinated the recent effort to get a little free pantry in the community.
And then later, members of the Ames Progressive Alliance will be here with a guest who will talk about the Center for LGBTQIA, plus student success at Iowa State University. First, Dennis has a look at this week's news. And Dennis, go ahead, buddy.
And there was plenty of news to report last week, indeed, from the pages of the Ames Tribune, Paul, starting Saturday, when there was word that nine-term Iowa Republican District 4 Congressman Steve King had showed up in Ames last Friday. He answered a variety of audience questions on such topics as immigration, climate change, trade, and President Trump's broadsides against four Democratic congresswomen. The audience in the city auditorium had a variety of reactions, ranging from applause to anger. Also last Saturday, a story about Iowa's Democratic and Republican party organizations, both of which are gearing up for next year's election, of course. Democrats are working to increase communication with voters. Republicans are trying to continue their inroads with the state's rural voters. Also Saturday, word that an Ames man had been charged with receiving and possessing child pornography. A grand jury indicted 33-year-old Jonah Paulus. This coming the same week Paulus was sentenced to 90 days in jail after pleading guilty to assault with intent to commit sexual abuse. One more note from Saturday, two people suffered minor injuries Friday when two SUVs collided on South Duff Avenue just north of the Highway 30 interchange. The impact caused one of those SUVs to roll over and land in a ditch in the median. Sunday brought an explanation of what happened to nearly all of us in Ames on Saturday, you know what I mean, when the power went out all around town. That outage was caused by a fault in a transmission line, yep. The Ames power plant was undergoing maintenance at the time, and electricity was being supplied by sources outside the city. Well, sure enough, if something can go wrong, it will. A transmission line between Des Moines and Ames providing electricity to the city had a problem, and that interrupted the supply to the entire area, leaving just about everyone without electricity, including me. At the same time, in a separate incident, thousands of Alliant customers just south of Ames lost power, so it was one of those days indeed. Also report Sunday on the Iowa Summer Games that were taking place in Ames. On Saturday, people from all across the state had come to the city to see competitions in a variety of events. And a big feature story Sunday about 13-year-old Grace McCunn. You know her. She's the local teenager who has made a name for herself by raising more than $50,000 for Blank Children's Hospital in Des Moines. Now she's gearing up to continue fundraising for the third annual Amazing Grace Lemonade Race. That's what it's called. Going to take place tomorrow morning at Ada Hayden Park in Ames. Going to kick off at 7:30 a.m. with a kids' run for children between 2 and 5 years old. Then a 5K run and walk is going to start at 8. All proceeds from the events are going to, Blank Children's Hospital. Tuesday brought word about Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders' visit to a farm between Ames and Nevada. On Saturday night, about 50 people showed up and heard Sanders touch on some of his common campaign talking points, such as taking on the big insurance and pharmaceutical companies. He said, in his words, it's their greed that is killing the American citizen. He also talked about climate change and said college tuition needs to be made free. Tuesday also brought word that a former director of Ryman Gardens in Ames is going to receive $225,000 for unpaid wages, part of a settlement of a lawsuit that she had filed against Iowa State University. Theresa McLaughlin had claimed the university breached its contract with her by failing to pay all of her earned commissions and failing to fully reimburse her for unused paid time off. Also, a report on Tuesday that new chapter had opened in the relationship between the John Deere Company and Iowa State University. Very interesting story. The Deere Technology Innovation Center opened its doors Monday at the ISU Research Park in Ames. It's the Deere Company's, or the Deere Company's, second lab connected to a major university in the U.S. Yeah, the other one's at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus. The new 33,000 square foot facility at the research park here is going to mainly be used to test and work on Deere's sprayer technology. On Wednesday, there was a long takeout about disagreements between Story County Supervisor Loris Olson and County Attorney Jessica Reynolds and Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald. This is a complex story. It goes like this. Before Tuesday's public meeting, Olson had asked both Reynolds and Fitzgerald to appear to talk about the county's involvement with the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. Reynolds said Olson told her that she, Olson, was facing political pressure on the topic. Reynolds told the supervisors on Tuesday that, in her words, political pressure of one supervisor is not a reason to take us away from our job duties. Olson said another reason for the sheriff and the county attorney to show up was to brief the newest board members, Linda Merkin and Lisa Heddens. Both Fitzgerald and Reynolds then met with the other two supervisors, and when Reynolds told Olson about the meeting, Reynolds said Olson lost her temper and started yelling at her, allegedly saying that the sheriff and Reynolds had stabbed her, Olson, in the back. All of this came out at Tuesday's meeting, which, by the way, both Reynolds and Fitzgerald did attend and speak at. Also Wednesday, word that charges had been filed against a Boone County sheriff's jailer who authorities said had pulled a gun during a fight at the Iowa State Fairgrounds earlier this month. The Polk County Attorney's Office filed charges against John McCormick of Madrid, including impersonating a police officer, assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, and carrying a weapon while intoxicated. One more note of interest from Wednesday, a story that demolition had started on the site of the last full-service gas station in Ames at the corner of Lincoln Way and Duff. The Hanson Sinclair gas station had closed several months ago, and it's being torn down to make way for a new coffee shop, one whose name starts with the letter S. But it's not who you think. No, indeed. This new coffee shop is going to be a Scooter's coffee shop. It's going to have both inside service and a drive-through window. The owner said he hopes to break ground sometime next month and be open by the end of the year. Yesterday, the trip's big story was that the Ames City Council had unanimously approved going ahead with the city's solar farm project. And that project, as you know, is called SunSmart Ames, and it lets customers buy a power pack, which is about half of a full solar panel. A San Francisco company is going to build panels on land purchased for the solar farm on Airport Road. Construction going to take 9 to 12 months. Should be finished by next summer. The council had hoped that 80% of the available solar packs would be sold by this week's meeting, but by meeting time, participation had reached 72%. But the council went ahead anyway. Also yesterday, word that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had appointed the chief executive officer of YSS in Ames, Andrew Allen, to the state's Children's Behavioral Health Systems Board. That board is going to facilitate coordination of Iowa's newly created children's mental health system. The goal of the system is to make sure that kids have access to mental health services all around the state. There was more yesterday, including word that street projects in Ames, they're going to affect a lot of us. And there were a lot of details yesterday. Lane closures on Lincoln Way between Welsh and Hayward Avenue started Wednesday for infrastructure improvements. That project is expected to last until August 7th. So listen up. Between now and then, the inside lane of westbound traffic on Lincoln Way is going to be closed. Eastbound traffic will remain two lanes. Meanwhile, construction work on alleys north of Main Street downtown between Duff and Douglas and between Kellogg and Burdett, they're going to continue for at least another 1 or 2 weeks, and so will work on Hickory Drive in Ames. One more note from yesterday, word that the Ames City Council had again approved an urban deer management program that lets licensed residents bow hunt in approved areas within the city limits. That program's going to start September 14th and run through January 10th, and only will be allowed at certain times during the day. It's the 13th year in a row that the council has approved a deer management program. The purpose? To reduce the potential threat the deer pose to drivers and the potential risk of Lyme disease. Quick look at today's Tribune, which has word that Roland Story Middle School counselor Michael Olson had resigned after a state board suspended his professional license for 3 years following an investigation into his social media communication with a student. That investigation revealed that Olson had solicited a personal and inappropriate relationship with a student. And one more note from today, word that a Virginia man had been charged in connection with a string of burglaries in Ames that took place yesterday. 22-year-old Charles Warwick is accused of breaking into 3 cars in the 1100 block of Carroll Avenue, as well as breaking into the McFarland Clinic's business support facility at 12th and Carroll. And, Paul, that's our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Tribune. That coffee shop at Lincoln Way and Duff, a Scooter's, not the other one that everybody probably thought was going in.
Yeah, well, you know,
that's really a change, and it's really in line with trends today. Everyone loves these coffee shops. Wow.
Yeah, going to have a drive-through and an in thing. Scooter is a much smaller chain than the other one, which has, the other one has thousands of facilities around the country. This one has a couple of hundred starting to build out. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
I like the idea that that's going to be used. And really, I like the thing that's going in there. It sounds like a good idea.
It does.
It's going to be successful. I don't, these coffee shops can't fail, I don't think.
Well, because all of us need something to stay awake these early morning hours.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Tell me about it.
And our great engineer, Paul Hertz, has passed on word to us while we've been on the air here that the jackhammer from that alley work I talked about that's going on in the alleys near us here has been heard on the air here at KHOI because it's right behind our building here.
Is that right?
So fortunately, they're not doing it right now, at least not that I can hear.
Rat-a-tat-tat.
Wait, that's not it, is it? Hey, it is 11 minutes after the hour, and we will be right back after this brief interlude. And we are back at 12 minutes after the hour. This is Lunkle Talk Friday. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dennis Hart.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Well, it's being called a labor of love, and it took more than a year of planning to make it a reality. I'm talking about the new Little Free Pantry that recently opened in Story City. And one of the people who made it happen was Kurt Jensen, pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church. He's on the phone with us right now. Hello, Kurt.
Hello. Good morning.
Fantastic. The Little Pantry. Talk about how that idea was born.
Well, it kind of came out of the idea of the little free libraries that have been popping up all over the nation. The first one of those was put up about 10 years ago with the idea of, you know, if you have a book, share a book. If you need a book, take a book. And the idea spread really quickly. We have several of them here in Story City, including one in front of our church. But in 2016, there was a lady in Fayetteville, Arkansas, named Jessica McClard, who adapted the idea to feed hungry people. And she built a little free pantry at Good Shepherd Lutheran there, and then started a website to share the idea, littlefreepantry.org. And now there's been hundreds of little free pantries or blessing boxes, sometimes they're called, popping up all over the nation and the world. And so our local ministerial association asked, why not here in Story City?
Kurt, yeah. How did you get them, everybody together on this project? You mentioned the ministerial association. It wasn't just you. How did you get everybody's cooperation?
So a lot of different conversations. The ministerial thought it was a wonderful idea to start something like that. Our churches had come together years ago to create our Loaves and Fishes food pantry right here in Story City. And last year, the Roland Middle School opened a Norseman food pantry at the school in Roland. So there's already been a real history of partnership in our area and helping feed hungry people. But those have pretty limited hours. You know, the food pantry here in Story City is just open 10 to noon on Saturdays, and at the middle school, that's just 4 to 5 on Sundays. And not everybody who's food insecure can make it during those hours, so it can be hard for people to get to them. And so we asked the ministerial, what if we had a little free pantry here in Story City?
Well, you know, Kurt, one of the things I really like is the ministerial association itself. When I grew up in that town, the churches were so autonomous, and people who were in one denomination hardly interacted with people from another. I'm talking here about the pastors, you know. And I was wondering if you knew, Kurt, how long the ministerial association has been going on there in Story City.
It's been meeting for a few decades. I've got a file of stuff even from before I came 8 years ago that, you know, they've been meeting for a very long time and organizing worship efforts and other outreach efforts in the community. So that's been a really healthy organization here in Story City and in Roland for a long time.
And really, this is just one more evidence of the results of that and the interaction you have to create things happening. When you have a need in a community, I always say go to an existing organization that has a record of putting things together and coordinating it. And speaking of coordinating it, how does this continue, Kurt, so that we can be assured that it's always remained stocked? And you might mention some of the people who've been key in making this happen and making an ongoing thing.
It's really been like you said, a labor of love by a bunch of people in the community. We talked first with the Loaves and Fishes Board and with the owners of the building and with Reliance State Bank, because they own the parking lot just north of the building. Because we talked about, well, where better to have this little food pantry than right next to our existing food pantry where people are used to going. And we talked with the city and the Greater Chamber Connection here in town to get everybody on board. And then Joe Ahrens donated his time and materials to build the box. It gave it a real fun and whimsical design. And he knew Shelley Hassebrock, a high school art teacher in Ames, who had her students paint it with a carousel theme, which really matches our town, of course. Then we had a local insurance company that raised some funds for signage and for an initial stocking. And then Ashley Mullenbach agreed to help coordinate volunteers who will check it and restock it on a regular basis.
So, Kurt, Paul and I have a picture of you and some of those other folks in front of the little free pantry. And so to describe it to our listeners, it's a box similar, as you say, to those free libraries, those little free libraries. But who stocks it and what do they stock it with?
Yeah, it really can be stocked. That's the beauty of it. It's kind of open source that anyone can give what they have or take what they need. We have guidelines printed right on it, and there's more guidelines that you can find at littlefreepantry.org, which has maps to all the different little free pantries that have been popping up all over the place. But people are asked to just give non-perishable food, paper products, school supplies, diapers, personal care items, that sort of thing, but no razors or other sharps. And so anyone in the community can help stock it. Ashley Mullenbach is recruiting folks to have one individual or family or group to check it each day of the month on a regular basis, just to have somebody looking at it, making sure that things are good and to refill it whenever needed.
Well, I think it's such a beautiful design when I look at this. It looks like Walt Disney.
It does.
It's got a whimsical.
Lovely.
Well, it's got a roof, you know, that looks like a Swiss Alps cottage, and then of course there's plenty of shelf space, and it's right by the local food pantry. And another thing I'm thinking of, Kurt, about this project is the anonymity of it. You know, if you go into the food pantry itself, there's paperwork to be done, and everything is confidential, and it's user friendly, and no one's judgmental. I love what goes on there, and I've volunteered there on behalf of my church before. But the thing about this is, you don't do any paperwork. It's informal. You know, you donate. It's two-way street. You donate and you receive.
Yeah, and one of the things, it's open 24 hours a day.
Well, you know, what we have here in central Iowa is not great swaths of poverty like you have in a depressed area of an urban area. Mm-hmm. Poverty occurs on one block where there's one family yeah. having difficulty. And right. a lot of people assume that everyone's middle class and has a secure income. But things happen. You can have all kinds of economic crises. And, of course, we all remember the recession when a lot of white-collar people find themselves at food pantries. And so yeah. this has the added advantage of anonymity. You could stop there at midnight and get something out of there, and no one would see you, and no one would make any judgments. So it's one more yep. way that people can take advantage mm-hmm. and fill a need for their family without fear of embarrassment or judgment or anything like that. So as you pointed out, right. necessarily the hours at a food pantry are limited. Here, it's 24/7. That's what I like about mm-hmm. it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, some little free pantries get emptied and refilled several times a day. And some places, they sit empty for a little while. And that's okay, too, because they found that if the supply is irregular, then people don't tend to overuse it or to loiter around the area.
We're talking to Pastor Kurt Jensen of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Story City about the little free pantry that opened up last month. Kurt, what's been the response from the community? Have you had people using it in terms of picking up those items that have been donated? Has it started being used?
Oh, yes. I know that it's been emptied and refilled several times already over the last few weeks that it's been up now.
Well, that's excellent.
That's good to hear because, you know, whenever you put something up or organize anything, mm-hmm. you hope there'll be a result. Mm-hmm. And there's a very tangible thing here where you know there's a result. You know what comes and goes. So that's yeah. reinforcing and encouraging to know that people have actually utilized this service. The other thing about this and the little libraries is that it's a marvelous implication that we trust generally that people will behave themselves.
Indeed so, yes.
You mm-hmm. know, that mm-hmm. really is based on community trust. And some of the people who might be, who view the world negatively will say, well, that's gonna be ripped off and abused. Well, that's a chance you take. But in reality, most people behave themselves, don't they, Kurt?
That's right. Yep.
And so I think that's going
to be a wonderful... It's a wonderful way for people in our community to be able to help neighbors who are struggling to put meals on the table.
And you don't know who's struggling. That's the thing about yeah. Iowa and small towns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing is divorce or some family upheaval where, you know, they might have to sell the house. They might suddenly be financially pressed in many ways. And here they can go and pick up what they need and... no one sees them. No one makes judgments. And I think that the other thing is access, you know.
Yeah.
Any 24-hour period, you can go in and do that. And yeah. the real key is having people overseeing this so that it gets restocked. I don't think anyone's worried about security, you know.
So how has the restocking gone, Pastor? Have people been putting material in on a regular basis to keep it full or close to full?
Yeah, we've actually had at least 10 or 15 groups or individuals sign up to take a particular day of the month to check it and to restock it. We're hoping to have as many as 30 so that you know it's very regularly checked. But that's been a wonderful outreach that people have been stepping up to be a part of.
Well, I really think the main thing is that it gives people a chance to participate on a lot of different levels. And a lot of that can be anonymous, too. People just stop by and mm-hmm. maybe late at night and put things in there for somebody, you know? Mm-hmm. I just like the 24-hour availability yeah. because right. that says, hey, you make the choices. We trust you. We trust people to stock it and bring things that they want to share. Labor of love really describes this because all the implications are that we trust you. We don't do any means testing here. We trust you to be a person who actually has a need. Mm-hmm. And we know that people will be trustworthy enough
right.
to restock it. That's a positive view of human nature, you know? It really mm-hmm. is.
So, Pastor, given the success, the apparent success of this off the top, maybe too early to ask the question, but what the heck, I'll ask it anyway. Any plans perhaps in the works to expand this to another location in the community down the road?
We haven't talked about that yet, but it's certainly a possibility, and people can put them up in their own yards, just like the little free libraries. And that's what we've seen in other communities around the nation and even other countries around the world. If you look at the littlefreepantry.org website, you can see that a lot of times where one has gone up, suddenly others have gone up as well.
Well, that's a good point, because driving around Story City, I notice that there are three or four little libraries in town, okay?
Yeah.
And that just shows you that this suggestion or the existence of one location actually begets more, because more people say, that's nice, and I want to do that. And we'll see what happens, whether this becomes a situation where people do this kind of sharing also. Because Story City is not a big town, but there are three or four of these little libraries.
Yeah.
So that just shows you how the idea is sort of catching, you know.
Yeah. Kurt, in the couple of minutes that we have left, could you go over one more time what you're looking for in this little free pantry? What types of items would you like to see donated?
Yep, the main thing is non-perishable food, food that's not going to spoil or, that's going to be able to be shelf stable. And then paper products, school supplies, diapers, personal care items, those sorts of things. Not anything that's too terribly bulky. It doesn't have an enormous amount of space to be able to accommodate other things, but not anything that's sharp, no razors or anything like that. But
I really think that when we pack things for overseas, I've been involved in that sort of mission work where you pack things for your church or some other entity that goes overseas. They really have a need for personal care items.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned, Kurt, that it's not just food, but some of these other things. You could put combs in there. You could put a mouthwash. Anything that comes into play for personal care, that's also possible.
Yeah. Kurt, we have to thank you for joining us. We have to rush off here, but good luck to you in Story City on this little free pantry. It's a great idea. Thank you for sharing it with us this morning on Local
Talk. Absolutely.
Pastor Kurt Jensen
of
Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Story City. A great story up there, Paul. There's no question about that.
I love talking about it, and that is worthy of sustaining itself.
It is indeed. It is 28 minutes now after the hour.
And coming up after a brief musical interlude, members of the Ames Progressive Alliance will be here with a guest from Iowa State University who will discuss the university's Center for LGBTQIA plus student success on campus.
Paul and I will be right back here next Friday, and we hope you will join us then.
Of course.
Ann.
Good morning. This is Ann Kinzel and Carolyn Myers with the Ames Progressive Center. I'm sorry, Ames Progressive Monthly Show. And today, my host Carolyn Myers and I are going to interview Brad Fryhofer, the director of the Center for LGBTQIA plus Student Success at Iowa State. Brad's going to tell us all about the center and the kind of activities he does.
Great. Thanks, Ann. First of all, I just wanted to welcome Brad here and also ask him, you know, for the people who don't know, what exactly does LGBTQIA stand for? It's a lot of letters there.
Absolutely. Well, good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Brad. I use they/them pronouns, and the acronym is a little bit of a beast. I know a lot of folks learn through it, but LGBTQIA+ stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual, and ally.
Wonderful. So how long have you been working at the Iowa State Center?
Yeah, I've been at Iowa State now. It's incredible how quickly time passes, but I've been here now 10 years, a little over 10 years. I started in November of 2008.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Awesome. We're so glad that you're still with it. So how long has the center been at Iowa State that's been devoted to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual, and allied students? How long has that center been existing at Iowa State?
I think that may shock some folks. We here in the middle of Iowa at Iowa State have a really long history here. We are the 14th oldest LGBTQIA+ college center in the country. We started in November of 1992. So we're actually not too far away here from our 30th anniversary, which is kind of remarkable. Not very many LGBTQIA centers can say that across the country. So we're really proud of that that reality. So we've been around for a little bit.
That's fantastic. So, you know, I'm curious, are there any specific things that were happening on campus that, you know, 30 plus years ago that made them start the center?
That's a really great question. You know, we are actually right now in the process this summer and the last summer as well of really working through our archive. We really haven't gone through and looked through the whole scope of LGBTQA history at Iowa State. It's a lengthy one. It actually dates back earliest articles that we have are in the 60s and early 70s that show student activism and engagement, community building, and resistance happening during that time. So really kind of exciting. So from that point all the way to when our office was created in 1992, a lot was happening. So there was certainly a surge and a push from students in the 90s to have a space where LGBTQA students could come chat with a staff member that they would trust and be able to understand their experience and be able to provide support for them. And that really was the surge at that time. But we're still learning more about our history. So I certainly invite folks who may have better knowledge than I to come share, or if they've got documents or pieces of history to drop by the center and let us know.
Sure, that's great. How many students does the center currently serve?
Oh my goodness, we see thousands of students every semester. With all the events that we do, I think last year we counted over 120 LGBTQA events on campus. So there is a lot happening every week. We see thousands of students every semester.
That's just so amazing. It really warms my heart to hear that. On a personal note, my cousin has identified as a lesbian, and she's younger than me. And when she a few years ago decided to do a college visit here at Iowa State, and I'm an Iowa State alumni, I'm showing her around campus and showing her all my little favorite nooks and crannies of places that I used to hang out when I was a student. And you know, she's very shy, and she was very shy about, you know, opening up to people about her sexuality. And I took her to the center, and I didn't announce ahead of time that that's where we were going. And I just walked in. And I just said, okay, you know, I introduced her to some students and I said, you know, this is a great place if you decide to go to Iowa State where you'll be very accepted and, you know, you'll find a lot of support. And everybody there, you know, me walking in, they were just so friendly and they were so accepting of her and were willing to talk to her about Iowa State and their experience. And so I have a very fond memory that way as an alumni.
I'm so glad to hear
that. So that's I really appreciate everything there at the center.
That's great. Yeah, that's what the chart of the environment that we try to create there, a welcoming space. It's certainly a very vibrant and bright space for those who've seen the center space. And in our newly expanded and renovated space in the Memorial Union, it is remarkable. So I recommend if folks have not been in to stop on in and take a look at it. It's quite magnificent.
Well, I've been to the center, and I was very impressed, and it is certainly vibrant. There's no doubt about that. So you said you were working through the archives. So what are you going to do with that? Are you going to have some kind of presentation about the history of the center? What's going to happen there?
I think this is a long-term project. So we really are working with our partners over in the Parks Library. Special Collections really operates just that, Special Collections at Iowa State. And we have an LGBTQA growing archive there. And so we really want to magnify that. We've got some details we've been pulling across the country. We've got some amazing alums who've shared with us some great nuggets of knowledge from history during their time at Iowa State, whether it's 1971, 1974 to even most recently 2000, 2004. These are really valuable pieces for our team. So we really want to just try to compile that information, and then we'll work with students to do projects to help us really understand that history. So really the first step is collecting the history. The second step is really trying to understand, okay, what happened? Let's read through it. Let's understand how these things connected. And who do we need to go chat with a little bit more? So these are great student projects. These can be done in a lot of different academic majors, and they can help us begin to write the history a little fuller.
That's really cool. Have other schools around the country who have centers? And you said there are 13 who are older than Iowa State's, right?
Yeah.
So have any of them done something like this?
Yeah. My alma mater up at Mankato State, they are the second oldest LGBT center in the country. I think that surprises a lot of folk. They are, and they work with the Treader Museum up in Minneapolis to have a great history of Mankato's growth of their LGBTQA community and their center space. Their center space started, I think, in 1977. So it's really remarkable and again, really surprising. Between them and Michigan's the oldest, the first. So really exciting. The history, they all do some great work there around archiving their journey and their history.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, the center has been there for 30 years, but I think for our listeners it might be good to understand a little bit more about it. So Betty Baird, our producer, did a little research, and she found out that your mission is the Center for LGBTQIA Student Success develops academic and personal success, community and leadership for lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, intersex, asexual, and allied students. If your name wasn't a mouthful, that's a mouthful. So, you know, that sounds, you know, coming from the business world, I've read many mission statements. They all kind of sound in the same vein. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what really happens in your center?
Yeah, I think, you know, our mission statement is really rooted around kind of four points. We really want to develop pride in who folks are and who students are. I think a lot of students may be coming from spaces where they may not have seen that reflected back to them. We really want to focus on community, leadership, and mentorship. So we do that through all of our programs and services. And we offer a lot throughout the year. As I mentioned, there's a lot of events happening. So we do that in a lot of different ways. But we really want to try to start there in building community, getting students to know that they're not alone. There's a huge, vibrant LGBTQA community at Iowa State, and we have a long history, as we've talked about already. And so they're really joining a community, a family that's been growing and working for a long, long time. Our goal is just to try to help them connect and then provide some frameworks for them to be able to grow and develop as leaders and find those mentorship opportunities that will help them thrive.
So where do you get your funding from?
So we're funded through the Dean of Students Office and the Vice President of Student Affairs. We also are generously supported by donors, community folk, alums. It is really that, honestly, that support that's really helped us make this huge move recently in the spring to our newly expanded space. So every time we walk into the center today, I'm honestly taken aback. It chokes me up a little bit because we've been there's been alums who've been contributing and community members here in Ames who've been contributing to our space since 92. And that has helped us do the renovations and the expansion that we were able to do this year. And to watch what happens to students is remarkable. So students are able to now come in. And it's fun to watch them stagger back a little bit as they take in this new space, which for them is really the largest that they've seen in Iowa State's history.
Well, so Carolyn's going to have some more questions for you, but we're going to do a little station break here. So I want to thank our host, KHOI Community Radio 89.1. You're tuned to KHOI Community Radio 89.1, and this is Local Talk, and today is the monthly Ames Progressive Alliance show with our guest from Iowa State University, Brad Freihofer.
Great. Thanks, Ann. So, Brad, tell me more about your career at Iowa State. I know that you've done some roles before you started becoming the center's director. So tell me more about what led you to become this role, to have this role at Iowa State.
Yeah. So when I took the job here at Iowa State, I have to be honest, it was my dream job, and it remains to be that for me. So every day I go to work, it's a real privilege and honor to do it. I get to work with an incredible group of students, faculty, staff, and community members here in Ames. But really what got me interested in here was during my undergraduate career up in Mankato. I had a friend of mine who was an ally who I think this is before I kind of came out. And this friend of mine knew, I think, that I might identify in the LGBTQA community. And so she was kind enough. She's like, you know, hey, we should go over to the LGBT Center today. And I was a little resistive. I was like, nah, I don't know. I don't think so. And that friend ended up convincing me over a lunch to go on in. And I'm so glad I did. From that moment, I think that was in my sophomore year of college. It really changed everything after that. I met an incredible group of people. I found a community of folks and people who had shared experiences that I had growing up that I thought I was all alone with. And so from that moment on, I really started to see what this type of work can do. And my mentor, Jessica Flatiquil, who really helped pave the way for me and show me that this is a job, you could do this. And so that's what really got me started. And then I did some community action work, both in the Women's Center and the LGBT Center at Mankato State. And I worked for the Sexual Violence Resource Center of Blue Earth County doing some crisis and advocacy work for survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. So between those areas and some nonprofit work in Mankato, I really just got excited about how can I contribute to this world. And so when this job came open, it was a dream.
That's fantastic. So how has your role changed from, 10 years ago to today? I'm sure there's been lots of changes in how your role has played out.
Yeah, lots changed in 10 years, both nationally, locally, through the state. I laugh a little bit because the 3 days into coming to starting my job, oral arguments were held in the Supreme Court for marriage equality here in the state. And so my friends and colleagues from around the country were like, what happened? You're there 3 days. Now they're having marriage equality conversations. So it was a remarkable different time at that space. I think what's changed today is we've got a community that's growing right now in Ames and at Iowa State. We got a community that's active. We have Ames Pride Fest today. We didn't necessarily have that 10 years ago. We have resources on campus that are different, and the student population on campus is significantly different. It's grown tremendously since when I arrived in 2008. And we just got new priorities. So we've got our new Thrive LGBTQA leadership program, which is an emerging LGBT program for emerging LGBTQA leaders. That program did not exist 10 years ago. So a lot of new programs, services, and resources are now available to students that we didn't have yet 10 years ago.
So tell us a little bit more about this Thrive program. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, so Thrive, we started this program 2 years ago. It was a pilot program. We wanted to see what would happen if we took some LGBTQA emerging leaders, so usually freshmen or sophomores or juniors, and see what would happen if we got them together and helped them through a curriculum to understand what authenticity means, to be an authentic LGBTQA leader? What would that look like? How would we do that? And so we worked with this large national conference So that students would go through this about 8-session course, quote unquote, where they would get a chance to go to a national conference during the middle of that course. And so through their volunteer time, they joined us. And in 8 sessions, it was remarkable what happened when we brought students together around a shared conversation around LGBTQA identity and leadership. And so through that conversation and through that success of that early program, we've done it now last year for the second year, and we'll do it again this year with an expanded group of students. So we started with 4, we went to 9, and this year I think we'll be in that 15 area.
How do you choose them? How do you decide identify an 18 or a 19-year-old as an emerging leader? And I think my question goes way beyond LGBTQIA status or identity. It's just I want to know.
Well, we really asked in the application. First of all, I will say the application process is extremely difficult. We had 9 openings. We had over 60 applications this last year. So it is really difficult, to be honest with you. But the submissions are really fantastic. We've asked students to really think about leadership. We've asked them to think about identity. We've asked them to think about in that application to reflect on these topics. And to hear what narratives come up for them, you really get to see where folks are. And I was telling our Thrive students this year, really how deeply impressed our staff was to read these applications. And through that application, you can see the trends of the students and where they are and where that potential is. There's so much potential. I think we've only hit the tip of the iceberg.
So how many Thrive classes have you had?
So we've only done this 2 years. We're going to do our 3rd year coming up. We're going to see this year. We're traveling. So every year the conference, the big conference I'm talking about, is actually one that Iowa State started in 1993. But this conference, we travel somewhere else in the Midwest every year. So it's always in a Midwest college university. So this year, I think we're going to Western Michigan. So we'll see what this year's Thrive Journey brings. But I imagine we'll have a lot of applications, and that selection process will begin in November.
Is the program formally evaluated?
Yeah, so we evaluate each year. We do an assessment each year to see what students learned and grew. And last year, we definitely saw that growth. It was tremendous.
So I'm excited to hear about all this growth. It's really heartening to hear that there's so many students who are interested and you know, want to be great leaders in our community. This kind of goes back to something you said earlier. You said that the community around LGBTQIA has really grown at Iowa State. Now, what do you think the reasoning is behind that? Do you think it's because Iowa State's gotten bigger or because Iowa State's been more of a welcoming community so people have been more able to come out as their true selves?
I think it's probably a combination of a lot of factors, right? So national and local and regional changes. I think it's students being able to find our office and LGBT organizations. So some of this is a communication side of the house. I think some of it's related to students building community in different ways today. Technology and social media has evolved in those 10 years. So a lot has changed. And even being able to record and try to take in, well, how many? That is a very difficult question. So all that we know is what we definitely see and have seen a continued growth since 2008 in the number of students being involved with our programs, which is remarkable because we thought, okay, a few years ago, maybe this will be the ceiling, but it continues to grow. And that's what I'm really excited about. I think that gives students some really neat opportunities to meet students from all over the world. It's kind of an exciting space there in the center, especially those first 2 weeks of the semester.
So it's really important that people feel a community at Iowa State, but I also feel like it's really important for people to feel a community in Ames. What can we do as a community to make LGBTQIA students more welcomed in Ames? I think that's, you know, I really want to make sure everyone feels welcome in Ames. So how can we do that?
Well, I love about this community and the people in it is that folks are really they're doing some of that work right now. It's in the little ways and the big ways. So I'm going to give some examples. Ames Pride Fest, the fact that Ames Pride is existing and supported in the community is really important. Ames Pride Fest provides us an opportunity to take students down into the community of Ames and get to know and interact with folks from all over the community. These new crosswalks coming in are going. I mean, they've kind of been a little bit of the talk of the center space of the last few months. And students, I think, are excited to see themselves reflected in something. And it's just all we're talking about is a crosswalk, but it really does mean quite a bit. And it's things like we've got business owners who've been updating restrooms, gender inclusive restrooms, to doing LGBTQA events. And that really matters, providing access for hair care and health care. And there's just a lot of ways that folks are contributing and can contribute.
So as we know, the circulation of our local newspaper has been diminishing a little bit. KHOI has filled in other institutions, but a lot of people may not be familiar with the sidewalk and crosswalks. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can do my best. I'm sure there'll be some folks who will be able to speak to this better than I. But from what we're aware of is, City Council is moving forward with ability to do some really cool painting of crosswalks over by the library here in town. And so we'll paint four crosswalks. Two of them will be the Philadelphia rainbow flag. We'll have a trans flag and a non-binary flag that will be painted, which is remarkable. Where students are just talking, I'm like, I don't know if I've seen that configuration before in that way. And so I think students are going to be really excited about it. I think our staff are too. What a unique piece for Ames, and just a great way to see representation shared in a different way.
Are there other communities in the country that have these kind of crosswalks? Do you know?
There are, yeah. So, my gosh, I'm trying to think of – I want to make sure I get them right. But there are many. So especially in the East Coast here in the Midwest, there are a few as well. So it's kind of fun when you see them if you're walking around those towns and you come across them. They're a moment where at least I know for all the alums who are connected with our office, they'll usually – send us a photo, whether it's on Instagram or otherwise. They'll connect with us and be like, hey, look where I am. And I'm like, oh, all right, cool. You're in Philadelphia or you're in New York or you're in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So it's fun to see. And they'll be able to do that now in Ames, which is really exciting.
Well, that's interesting. By the library, that's kind of nice. That's our it's kind of our quasi-community center in Ames, our little public library.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So I'm going to have one quick question, and then I have two questions that I want to ask in closing before we finish in a few minutes. has there been any opposition that you've received on campus?
You know, the campus community has been really supportive. You know, when I look at the work we have to do, we collaborate with so many different campus units. And so I really am grateful for those collaborations as we try to continue to serve our students better. So on campus, I think we've got a lot of support and energy heading in really wonderful directions. And it's really collaborative. That's kind of the Iowa State way, which is really why I've loved working here the last, 10 plus years. We do face resistance. It does happen, whether it's folks coming outside of campus and protesting or, folks sending some not appropriate messages or emails or those type of things. I think that, that's – my mentor always told me that that's part of this job. So be aware of that as you head into that. What I'm really proud about is how our students work when they face that resistance. This is a resilient group of students. They're a brave group of students and a dedicated group and care about each other. It's really, I say this, but it's kind of a magical space when students be able to take care of each other and support each other as we navigate sometimes some resistance is really a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, I don't know if our listeners can get it from an auditory perspective, but I can certainly tell this morning with Brad that he's not kidding about the fact that this is his dream job. So my last question, or next to last question, Brad, I want you to tell us, what is the most important thing that you want the public to know about the center and the work that you do there?
You know, I think at the core, our work is to transform lives. It's to help develop that academic and personal success. And although it sounds like a mission statement, it really does matter in the lives of students. And that's something that you know, I have the privilege to be able to see every day. And that's really what I appreciate from the Ames community and Iowa State is allowing us to do this work. It really matters. It matters to parents. It matters to families. It matters to folks coming into Ames whose, you know, families have questions about safety and are their kids going to be okay here? It's the answer that I get to give around how supportive the Ames community is and in all the different ways, Ames Public Library, Ames Pride Fest, in all the different ways. Mm-hmm. It's really remarkable. So that's what I want to say. I really want to say thanks and for folks to continue to reach out if they have questions. But we're here to see if we can support and help get students to that point of personal and academic success, help them find community and become the future leaders.
Great. Well, thanks to KHOI and to our producer, Betty Baird, for giving us the opportunity to share Ames in building a more progressive community. And thank you, Brad. I've really loved having this discussion with you this morning. And I'm so grateful to you and to the center and Iowa State for what you're doing.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll ask one last quick question before we go, because I want our audience to be able to connect with you. What's the best way for people who are not at Iowa State to learn or connect with the center?
Absolutely. You can go to our website, www.center.dso.iastate.edu, or check us out on social media. We're The Center ISU for all platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Highly recommend our Instagram for those of you who have that out there. And visit us so you can contact us anytime.
Okay, well, I want to thank Brad, our producer Betty, my co-host Carolyn Myers, and, of course, KHOI. So please be sure to keep up with Ames Progressive activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page and website at http://amesprogressivealliance.org. You can get a copy of this radio show and follow the latest APA developments on our Facebook page and website. So, you've been listening to Local Talk Friday with Carolyn Myers, and I'm Ann Kinzel. Local Talk also airs today at noon and 5 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And you can hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org, as well as find the links to the guests and information you heard about the program. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we will train you. Come on down and join the Local Talk team.
And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.